bonus.
Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the super fans.
But they are who we thought they were.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Next Fan Up, the podcast by the fans for the fans. I'm Justin, the Seahawks super fan. We have got a great week of football. We've got a rematch of the Super Bowl. We've got the debut for a full game of Brett Hundley. We've got the Legion of Boom taking on a team that literally has no wide receivers on the roster. There's all sorts of fun to be had. In addition to that, you're going to see sort of the unexpectedly good teams continue to do good things. I'm looking at you, Bills and Bears. Man, what a week of football. Let's get to it. Let's start off with a Sunday night game. All right, Sunday night game. We had a rematch of the Super Bowl. We had the Falcons versus the Patriots. Much like the Super Bowl, the Patriots come away with the win, although in a very, very different fashion, 23-7. So we're going to start off with the victorious superfan, Patrick. It wasn't that long ago that you guys were midway through the third quarter and staring at a giant deficit. This one was never really in question. What was so different about this game?
The defense stepped up for the first time all year, arguably. I recorded a podcast with MJ a few days ago, and I said, you know, we're going to watch Matt Ryan throw 500 yards. And not the case. Not the case. You got some garbage time numbers, but that defense was pretty legitimate through the whole game. It kind of carried the offense.
Yeah, I think that's a great observation. And then I'll turn it over to you, MJ. This team seems to have carried over a very, very dynamic offense from last year to this year. But against a defense that, to say, has struggled, would be probably to overrate how well the Patriots have done on that side of the ball. No offense, Pat. Contained to just 7 points. And I think that was just a late touchdown in the fourth quarter. What happened that kept you guys in check?
The Falcons offense has not clicked yet. Watching every game up to this point, they have just not gotten it together. They look like they're gonna do something, but the offense just stalls out and never really gets in gear. At this point, I'm not sure what it's going to take for the Falcons to turn it around and, hell, even make the playoffs as bad as they're looking these days, because the first two games we won and we've lost the last three in a row, I can't blame it on the defense. I mean, the offense is just not getting it done. It's for the most part the same offense we brought over from last season. But yeah, there's just no clue as to why they haven't gotten it together yet.
Now, I'm usually the first person to get annoyed and upset when fans sort of point at their offensive coordinators. I feel like just about every fan on every team hates their offensive coordinator because they blame them for all the ills. But you did make a big transition at that point. Have you noticed a big difference in things like play calling, that sort of thing that might be contributing?
There has been some differences in the play calling, and Sarkisian did make the jump from college to the pros. And I've often said making that jump on the coaching side of the ball from college to pros doesn't usually go very well. The one thing that was different for Sarkisian was the first game that we lost was when he made his transition from being on the field to up in the booth. I'm not certain how that's factored in, but it's the only thing I can really point to and say, hey, there's the thing that's different about our first two games that we won versus the last three games that we've lost.
Yeah, and you know, if you guys didn't see this game, being up in the booth probably didn't do you any good.
If you didn't see the game, you might have been up in the booth.
Right? it looked like a horror movie. There was so much fog over the field. It was ridiculous. You were playing these in like the Andes mountain range with some like clouds rolling in, which was made for like kind of a unique camera angle to watch the game, the sort of like low over the shoulder sort of Madden view almost, which was, I thought was kind of entertaining. But let's flip it back to the New England Patriots. One of the things that I think has been really interesting has been the way that this year, no one player seems to be really carrying the offense. I mean, you could probably make the case of Tom Brady because he's the quarterback. But this was another great example where no one player had more than like four or five catches in this game. So just offensively, what's kind of the identity of this Patriots team, Patrick?
Oh, it's crazy because we have a bajillion-dollar receiver and, you know, the greatest tight end of all time. It just doesn't feel like that, you know, because of what you said. They're distributing the ball. Whoever's open's getting it. And for the most part, it's not the guys that we would have thought 6 months ago would be playing for the Patriots.
All right, MJ. And so defensively, everybody kind of pointed last year to how fantastic your offense was. But your defense was really, really good. You know, you had players like Vic Beasley step up. In particular, and you know, be really good in sort of pass rush situations. This year, the defense hasn't been there, even with the return of you know, what I think is one of the best corners in the league in Desmond Trufant. So I guess somewhat similar to my question about your offense. What's going on with the defense where they're just not clicking?
That's the question everybody here in Atlanta is trying to figure out the answer to. We started out losing. Well, I shouldn't say we started out losing Beasley, but when Beasley went down, I think that kind of hit the defense because he kind of was the spark. Tack McKinley really hasn't started. Tack's looked good. He's looked good, but he hasn't looked first round draft pick good. Yeah, I honestly don't know what it's going to take for the defense or the offensive side of the ball to get it together. I don't know if it's because everyone saw us go to the Super Bowl last year that people are scheming against us differently and we haven't planned well for that, or if it's the fact that I don't know. I've got no clue, honestly.
Yeah, I definitely understand that. Well, there you have it. The Patriots 23-7 over the Atlanta Falcons. Patriots once again atop the surprisingly good AFC East. The Falcons, meanwhile, are stuck in a dogfight for their division. So, gentlemen, thank you both for taking the time.
Hey, no problem. Thanks.
This is Justin here with Tom, the Chicago Superfan. Tom, your Bears with a, I think it's fair to say, surprising victory over the Carolina Panthers. Second win in a row. Just right off the bat, how are you feeling about this one?
Not too bad. Not as good as I'd like to feel. But it's a win, and you take them any way you can get them. And I really like some of the things I saw today, and really didn't like some of the things I saw. It was good enough to be what I thought was a better team, so I can't complain too much. You know, they didn't play badly, and when I say that, you know, I look at three things. I look at drops, and I only counted one today, Tariq Cohen. And I look at penalties, and they did pretty good on penalties up until the end, near the end of the fourth quarter, when they had to have a drive to run the game out, and then of course they committed three, but up until then they'd only had two. And I look at turnovers, and they won a turnover battle 3-0. So when you win in those three categories, and when you've got Cam Newton not playing very well, and he didn't, he was pretty inaccurate, then you've got a recipe for a potential victory. It'd be nice if you got a little help from your offense, and they didn't get much help from them today. They only ran 37 offensive plays. They converted exactly 2 third downs. Fortunately, one of them was in the last drive of the game. They converted 2 third downs in that last drive. So it was 3 total. But really, it was a miserable day. They held the ball for only 20 minutes, which means they hung the defense out to dry for almost 40 minutes out there. And the defense continued to play well. I was sure they were going to get worn down. I was just waiting for them to just drop from exhaustion. And there were times out there when they looked a little tired, but they hung in there. And I got to tell you, those guys were heroes today. They really were. They played hard to the very end, to the very last whistle. They rushed Cam Newton really hard, kept him under pressure. The defensive backs played way better than I thought they were going to play at the beginning of the year. I thought they were a serious weakness, and they've turned out to be a strength of the ball club. So real happy with the defense. The special teams were okay. They had a blocked field goal. The offense, you know, you're never going to be a really good team, like a playoff-type team, unless you can generate a little offense, and they just couldn't do that today. The Panthers kept getting penetration when they needed it up front. They kept stopping Jordan Howard in the backfield. They completed passes. As far as I know, the only two receivers that got passes were Tariq Cohen, who got one really good long one that really helped set up a field goal. And they completed a couple to Zach Miller. And I think maybe they had one to Tanner Gentry, who's a rookie this year. And that was about it. I mean, it was a miserable offensive football game for the Bears. And that is something that concerns me. They're going to have to do better in the future, or their margin for error is just going to be too slim. They're not going to be able to pull out these wins against better teams.
Well, there you have it. The Chicago Bears, low-key, maybe a good team. That defense especially is looking great. Tom, thank you for the time.
Thanks. Talk to you later, Justin.
All right, this is Justin. I'm here with Ken, the Chargers superfan. Ken, I'm going to imagine that you are in pretty good spirits right now. Your Chargers took on division rival Denver, beat them 21-0, an absolute shellacking. We have come a long way in 3 weeks, haven't we, Ken?
Yes, we certainly have. The Chargers look like a whole new team. I was pretty worried about them 4 weeks ago, especially with the coaching staff. And sometimes the coaching staff still, they still got a ways to go. But the way the defense is playing, the Chargers can really beat anyone in this league, especially with the injuries we've seen to a bunch of the contenders. The Chargers have avoided that big injury. And Philip Rivers still isn't playing his best, but he really kept it together and was able to string together third down receptions over and over again, which was able to do enough to beat the Broncos.
So is that really what you attribute to the defense? Obviously, between Ingram and Bosa, you've got a really potent combination. I think, you know, a month ago, everybody thought that Denver might be the best team in the league and that, you know, we were all ready to pretty much stick a fork in your team. Is this something you think is sustainable?
Yeah, I definitely do. I know that the Broncos were missing some starters on their offensive line, but the Chargers have been doing this all season. You know, Ingram and Bosa combined have the most sacks of any duo in the NFL. And, you know, we thought they were going to be good at the beginning of the season, and they have been just as good as we thought they were going to be, if not better. Ingram really looks like he's on his way to a defensive player of the year, and he's kind of turned this defense into an elite option, at least in the passing game. You know, we haven't really faced a great running team since the Dolphins, so that's, you know, still concerning. But in terms of the pass game, the Chargers, I feel real confident with Ingram and Bosa lining up on the other side.
And then one other player I want to ask you about is Hunter Henry. He's a guy that I liked coming out of school. Felt like he, you know, has taken a little bit of while to get going, but he seems, at least to me, to have sort of turned a corner. What can you tell me about his performance?
Yeah, he's been getting increased workload since the beginning of the year, and he's kind of taken it in stride and gone with it. He clearly looks like the replacement for Gates, and the way that he's pretty fast, but what I really like about him is just the catches that he does make. They're so flexible, and you don't see that a lot out of big tight ends, and he contorts his body in a way that you just don't see that often. But, you know, he looks like the next great tight end in the NFL, I think, and I can't wait till he starts starting instead of Gates, because Gates at this point looks pretty old, so.
All right, well, there you have it. A big win for the Chargers. They are not dead yet. They are starting to thunder back. Ken, thank you.
See you next week.
All right, this is Justin, the Seahawks superfan. I'm here with Andy, the Dolphins superfan. Andy, your team was triumphant over the New York Jets in what turned out to be one of the games of the week. Why don't you walk us through this game?
Crazy, crazy game from start to finish. You know, Josh McCown definitely has the Dolphins number dating back to 2004 when he beat us as a member of the Cardinals. He was 22 years old that day. A lot of time has passed, but he's still the same quarterback. And, I mean, at the end of the day, this is the highest offensive output the Dolphins have had. Whether it was Cutler or Moore, we rolled up 357 total yards to the Jets, 272. We picked off McCown when it really mattered at the end on one of the worst throws a quarterback has made against us this year, and really in recent memory. I mean, it was just, if you watch the replay, it was a horrendous decision, horrendous read. I'm not even sure we're a better team than the Jets, but we beat them today. And going forward, I mean, this AFC, especially AFC East, is very crowded, and I think Matt Moore gives us a better chance to win. There's going to be a lot of quarterback controversy this week in Miami.
So talk to me about the quarterback situation. I know that obviously with the Cutler injury, Matt Moore coming in and playing well, there's a lot of intrigue there.
Well, Cutler was playing very well in addition before. So Cutler, I believe, was 11 of 14 with two touchdowns and a pick and had a passer rating of around 110. Actually, Cutler had a higher passer rating, for whatever that's worth, on the day than Moore did. It was 110 to 102. So, you know, you put them both together, it was 25 of 37 for over 330 yards and four touchdowns. So they both had their way with the Jets' defense. It was clear Todd Bowles wanted to, you know, crowd the line of scrimmage, take away Jay Ajayi, and make Cutler beat him. And Cutler, for the most part, was doing exactly that. The reason the Jets pulled ahead is for a couple reasons. Number one, penalties. Both teams had really costly penalties against them on both sides of the ball. And, you know, Josh McCown, he found the really soft middle of the Dolphins defense right over Kiko Alonso's head and before the safeties. That can be easily exploited, and that's what McCown found on a number of his large completions. So, but I think Moore gives us a better chance going forward. And most people who put on the tape would probably agree.
All right, so now you're sitting at 4-2, tied in first place in your division. We're more than a quarter way through this season. Do you think this is sustainable?
Not sure it's sustainable. I mean, nothing the Dolphins have done over the course of the past, you know, really 14 months has been sustainable. I think we're 12-1 in close games under Adam Gase. I mean, those things typically regress after a while, but they haven't. And for whatever reason, we just have this mojo, and we're just incredibly clutch in this new regime. I think one thing worth mentioning is, you know, Matt Moore did what he did today, and his final numbers were 12 of 19 for 130-something yards, two touchdowns and a pick. He did what he did today without Devontae Parker. By the way, the Dolphins are 2-0 without Devontae Parker this year. He did what he did without Devontae Parker and without Laremy Tunsil. Laremy Tunsil, starting left tackle, had to leave the game, and he wasn't there for either of the final touchdown drives. And he had to block Leonard Williams a lot. So it's weird, man. The NFL is freaking weird, especially this season. I feel this has been a very especially high-variance season. And our next three games are all under the bright lights in primetime. We have a Thursday night game in a couple days from now in Baltimore. And then after that, we have primetime games against the Raiders and Patriots. So we'll see.
There you have it. The Dolphins 4-2. Looks like we got some big games to find out if this is going to be for real. Andy, thank you.
Later, buddy.
All right, this is Justin. Now I'm back with my good buddy Ryan, super fan of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Ryan, the Jacksonville Jaguars just annihilated the poor Indianapolis Colts 27-0. One, why you got to be so mean? Two, how did that happen?
Hey, the poor Indianapolis Colts, get out of here. We got Peyton Manning, and then we get to draft Andrew Luck. Enough of it. I don't care. 27-0, they deserve it.
Yeah, man, it was probably, I mean, fairly expected, but let's just start off with Jacksonville. I mean, your offense was probably amongst the best it's been all year. Blake Bortles threw for over 300 yards, had a QBR of 95. What was working so well that's been missing?
Okay. So for one, like you said, we expected this, and I did too. This is one game this season where I thought the opponent was kind of inferior, and I expected us to win, and we did. The offense, your question. I think this is sort of a generic, a general fan's dream and expectations and wants, because I listen to a lot of Jag stuff or whatever, and all the fans seem to want changes and, you know, try this, try that in the offense. Fans always have ideas, but you go the next week and either nothing changes or things go well despite no changes, you know, something like that. This was a lot of creativity was shown in the play calling. Bortles threw it downfield in this game, which we haven't really seen for a while, and threw it accurately, I guess I should say. We had a guy, Keelan Cole, catch a 50-yard bomb. He looked great in the preseason, but did basically nothing up until today. So there were just changes, and the play calling seemed different. A couple formations were different, so they really spiced it up.
All right. I'm probably bearing the lead, though. I mean, Saxonville Jaguars, you had 10 sacks in this game. 10 sacks. That's insane. Calais Campbell is up to 8 sacks on the year. What the hell, man?
Oh.
Explain that to me, because, like, you know, for years we've been saying we think this is going to be a good defense, but, man, who saw this coming?
Yeah, I didn't know what to expect for this season, because, like you said, we've been hearing, oh, the defense is going to be good. It's going to be good. And it just kind of never plays out that way every single season. And now it's all just coming to fruition, and I love it. You say 10 sacks is amazing, and this is the second time we've done it this year.
Huh.
We did that to the Texans in week one, and now we have another game on the road in division with 10 sacks. It's incredible. A couple people have shown the stat today. I think there's two other teams in history that have had 2 10-sack games. It might be within the first 7 weeks or whatever it is. Either way, it's impressive, and there's plenty of guys who can get to the quarterback. And when the Jaguars have a lead, that's when we're unleashed and we're coming.
Is Calais Campbell the best off-season signing in the NFL this year?
Yes. Yes. He has been better than I think even he would anticipate in terms of numbers. I'm sure he's always been consistent, and he's always making plays and wreaking havoc, but the sack numbers alone are worth it. And he makes plenty of plays that don't even show up on the stat sheet. And he kind of always seems to be given effort. I mean, he might be the key to making this defense actually elite, like we've been kind of expecting, or even take it from average to good or good to great. Maybe he was really the key piece that's kind of turned it.
Well, there you have it. If this one seems a little bit more like a gush fest, it's because, one, I'm a fan of that defense, and two, let's be honest, there's not a whole lot positive to say on the Indianapolis Colts side. Without Andrew Luck, we're not even talking about the same team. They didn't do anything. So I'll be sorry, Colts fans, not a whole lot to say there. So Ryan, appreciate you taking the time to walk us through this one.
Hey, could I make one more point before we go?
You know you can.
Leonard Fournette was out of this game. And I was just kind of worried from that standpoint, because we lean on him so hard. I'll make this quick, but I want to liken a guy to, if you have a friend or a coworker or a family member that you've seen for years and you only see their flaws and you're just not excited to see them, but then maybe a year goes by and you haven't seen them in a while and you're like, you know what? I wouldn't mind seeing TJ Yeldon today. And man, he was great. And I've given Yeldon a lot of guff over the years, and he showed up big today. Obviously, it was just kind of a massacre, and I'm feeling high on life, but just wanted to mention that. Fournette out, and we still get the win.
All right, there you have it. Thanks, Ryan.
Thank you.
This is Justin. Now I'm here with Charlie, the 49ers superfan. Charlie, your 49ers fell to the Dallas Cowboys 40-10. That is a pretty big blowout. I'm sure you've got all sorts of thoughts on this one, Charlie, so take it away.
Yes, the 49ers came out really flat to start that game. They, in fact, at first forced the three and out and then got the ball back on their ensuing kick, punt return. And very reminiscent to the 2011 NFC Championship game, the punt returner fumbled the ball and the Cowboys picked up, immediately scored with Dak, or with Zeke, I should say, and basically from then on, the game was over. The Dallas Cowboys are just way, way, way much better team than we are. Their offensive line totally dominated our defensive line. You know, for a few good plays, Reuben Foster had a big you know, meat in the hole moment against Zeke Elliott. But other than that, that's about all we saw for Reuben Foster, and the Cowboys really turned it on, 40-10. It's I also look at it like it's a regression to the mean. The Niners played 5 games where they only lost by a total of 13 points. And this is when you go back and you look at this, whatever, 2-14 season or whatever it ends up being, this is going to be what regresses us down to the mean for how many losses that we lose by the combined points. So we knew it was either going to be a regression to the mean or a progression to the mean with the Niners winning or losing by a lot. But this time it was losing, and the Cowboys are a for real team.
Now, the 49ers, obviously, at this point, are in just, it seems like an absolute tailspin. You mentioned that some of those losses were by pretty close margins. That doesn't change the fact that you're winless up to this point. I personally like Kyle Shanahan. I think he's a great pick as a coach. I like your general manager. But can they, how many losses can they withstand and still feel comfortable with their situation there?
Honestly, I feel like they could lose. They can go in 16 and be just fine. The main thing is they're going for next year. Today they had 9 out of their 10 draft picks that played and had a significant role, including both signal callers were rookies, and C.J. Beathard and Reuben Foster. That we've decided once we, you know, of course, we all already were looking at a lost season, and then once they, you know, had Navarro Bowman that they had to let go, and because he wasn't no longer being a veteran leader, you know, you knew this season was over. And so they're looking to next year. They're doing a tank job without actually doing it. And this is the first game where I became disinterested midway through the third quarter. It was really hard to watch. You know, one hit after another of C.J. Beathard, one turnover after another, one bad play after another. It was tough. But, you know, listen, these type of games happened just about every week last year. Same thing with the year before, the Jim Tom Sula era. Although we had a lot more success and wins so far, even this 7 games into the season. But just kind of watching it, the litmus tape, this is the first, well, really the second game besides week one where they got blown out against the Carolina Panthers. This, you know, for the vast majority, this team plays good teams close. And it got turnover heavy at the beginning. They were down 14 points with 9 minutes to go in the first quarter. And Zeke Elliott had nearly 60 yards and 2 touchdowns. It's, you know, they're not good enough to make mistakes, and they certainly made a lot of them.
So there you have it. San Francisco 49ers still looking for their first win. You're playing the Eagles next week. I don't think that's going to be the first one either. Hopefully, though, you see some progress. All right, Charlie. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, this is Justin. Now I'm here with Jared, the Ram super fan. Jared, you took on your buddy and mine, the Cardinals, and you absolutely put a spanking on them, just crushed them 33-0, possibly murdered Carson Palmer along the way. Why don't you just take us through this bloodbath?
You know, it was actually pretty close up until Palmer got hurt. I think the Cardinals had a decent drive. The first time they got the ball, they missed a short field goal, and then the Rams just got 2 field goals. And I think it was 6-0 when Palmer got hurt. And then the play got hurt. It was an interception that the Rams brought back to like the 18-yard line, and then I think Gurley scored the next play. So it went from a 6-0 pretty close game to Palmer being hurt, and then the Rams were up 13-0, and I think that was kind of almost game over once Palmer got hurt, because there's such a big drop-off from him to Drew Stanton. So, and I think Dr. Jones pointed out in his game wrap-up, this is the fourth time the Rams have injured Carson Palmer, which is a horrible thing. But, I mean, the Rams can have a good defense at time, and he's an older quarterback. So, yeah, they have an older roster, and I think – or the Cardinals have an older roster, and they kind of brought back the old guys for one last rodeo, and it looks like it might Dr. Jones is pretty doom and gloom after this loss, just with Palmer hurt and AP looking a little older than last week. So yeah, I was actually kind of worried about the game just going through, because the Rams looked so bad at London the last two times, and the Cardinals just whooped them the last game of the year. But I think the teams are totally different now with Fisher out. And but yeah, I was thinking it'd be a lot closer than that, but I'm definitely happy with the win going into the bye.
Yeah, you know, it's funny that you mentioned the fact that this is the fourth time they've injured Carson Palmer, the second time this year, which is just kind of nuts. One of the things that Dr. Jones points out that I want to bring up too is just talking about how basically the entire team on the field and off the field needs to get younger, which is, I think, a transition that your team has gone through over the last couple of years. And it's painful, but, you know, you come out the other side, you start to actually have hope. You start to believe in your team a little bit. I definitely think that they're right there, right around that point. By the same token, though, talk to me a little bit about what you did offensively. I mean, it's not like Carson Palmer plays defense for the Cardinals, and you had a lot of success on that side of the ball.
Yeah, nothing super flashy, just kind of good football with, you know, a good running game, balanced attack. I mean, they didn't ask Goff to do a whole lot. He made a couple passes, but they just kind of mixed it up. Good play calling. I just can't say enough good things about the offensive coaching staff. Just putting Goff in a position to win and to succeed, making easy reads for him, and taking a couple shots downfield, but mostly short to intermediate, and just like realizing he's so young and so learning so much, so not asking him to do so much. In fact, the only game I feel like they asked him to do too much was the Seahawk game. But I feel like they're just putting him in good position, and yeah, using some turnovers and short fields to get some points. But yeah, nothing too flashy. And I feel like you can't start any receiver on the Rams in fantasy, because it's going to be a different one every week. Pretty much it's Todd Gurley's the only one that, you know, is going to get the ball week in, week out. But this week they kind of spread it out between Woods and Kupp. And yeah, it's almost like the last couple of weeks they've put Sherman on Sammy Watson. They've put Jalen Ramsey on Sammy Watkins. This week is Peterson. It's almost like Sammy Watson just kind of takes up the best defensive player.
Poor guy can't catch a break.
Yeah, poor guy. Then it's kind of just like 10-on-10. Just put like an elite cornerback in Sammy Watkins and play 10-on-10 football. But yeah, so his numbers aren't there, and he's probably still upset. But at least he's kind of picking up a good defensive player and letting then Goff and McVay just kind of give him what the defense gives them, and then just kind of taking it one step at a time.
Nope, there you go. The Rams improved to 5-2, mathematically in first place in the NFC West. They played one more game than the Seahawks.
But we'll take it.
Although the Hawks do have a tiebreaker at the moment. Congratulations on the big win and what just continues week in, week out to look like a really, really competitive team. So great game, Jared. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Justin. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, this is Justin. Now I'm here with Jared, the Rams superfan. Jared, you took on your buddy and mine, the Cardinals, and you absolutely put a spanking on them, just crushed them 33-0, possibly murdered Carson Palmer along the way. Why don't you just take us through this bloodbath?
You know, it was actually pretty close up until Palmer got hurt. I think the Cardinals had a decent drive. The first time they got the ball, they missed a short field goal, and then the Rams just got two field goals. And I think it was 6-0 when Palmer got hurt, and then the play got hurt. It was an interception that the Rams brought back to like the 18-yard line, and then I think Gurley scored the next play. So it went from a 6-0 pretty close game to Palmer being hurt, and then the Rams were up 13-0, and I think that was kind of almost game over once Palmer got hurt, because there's such a big drop-off from him to Drew Stanton. So, and I think Dr. Jones pointed out in his game wrap-up, this is the fourth time the Rams have injured Carson Palmer, which is a horrible thing. But, I mean, the Rams can have a good defense at time, and he's an older quarterback. So, yeah, they have an older roster, and I think – or the Cardinals have an older roster, and they kind of brought back the old guys for one last rodeo, and it looks like it might Dr. Jones was pretty doom and gloom after this loss, just with Palmer hurt and AP looking a little older than last week. So yeah, I was actually kind of worried about the game just going through, because the Rams looked so bad at London the last two times, and the Cardinals just whooped them the last game of the year. But I think this, the teams are totally different now with Fisher out. And but yeah, I was thinking it'd be a lot closer than that, but I'm definitely happy with the win going into the bye.
Yeah, you know, it's funny that you mentioned the fact that this is the fourth time they've injured Carson Palmer, the second time this year, which is just kind of nuts. One of the things that Dr. Jones points out that I want to bring up too is just talking about how basically the entire team on the field and off the field needs to get younger, which is, I think, a transition that your team has gone through over the last couple of years. And it's painful, but, you know, you come out the other side, you start to actually have hope. You start to believe in your team a little bit. I definitely think that they're right there, right around that point. By the same token, though, talk to me a little bit about what you did offensively. I mean, it's not like Carson Palmer plays defense for the Cardinals, and you had a lot of success on that side of the ball.
Yeah, nothing super flashy, just kind of good football with, you know, a good running game, balanced attack. I mean, they didn't ask Goff to do a whole lot. He made a couple passes, but they just kind of mixed it up, good play calling. I just can't say enough good things about the offensive coaching staff. Just putting Goff in a position to win and to succeed, making easy reads for him, and taking a couple shots downfield, but mostly short to intermediate, and just like realizing he's so young and so learning so much, so not asking him to do so much. In fact, the only game I feel like they asked him to do too much was the Seahawk game. But I feel like they're just putting him in good position and, yeah, using some turnovers and short fields to get some points. But, yeah, nothing too flashy. And I feel like you can't start any receiver in the Rams in fantasy because it's going to be a different one every week. Pretty much it's Todd Gurley's the only one that you know is going to get the ball week in, week out. But this week they kind of spread it out between Woods and Kupp. And, yeah, it's almost like the last couple of weeks they've put Sherman on Sammy Watson. They've put Jalen Ramsey on Sammy Watkins. This week is Peterson. It's almost like Sammy Watson just kind of takes up the best defensive player.
Poor guy can't catch a break.
Yeah, poor guy. Then it's kind of just like 10-on-10. Just put like an elite cornerback in Sammy Watkins and play 10-on-10 football. But yeah, so his numbers aren't there and he's probably still upset. But at least he's kind of picking up a good defensive player and letting the Goff and McVay just kind of give him what the defense gives them, and then just kind of taking it one step at a time.
Nope, there you go. The Rams improved to 5-2, mathematically in first place in the NFC West. They played one more game than the Seahawks.
But take it.
Although the Hawks do have a tiebreaker at the moment. Congratulations on the big win and what just continues week in, week out to look like a really, really competitive team. So great game, Jared. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Justin. We'll talk to you soon.
This is Justin. I've got Chris, the Saints superfan, and Brian, the Packers superfan. New Orleans Saints victorious over the Aaron Rodgers-less Packers, 26-17. So we'll go ahead and start with the victorious team. Sitting at 4-2, which 4 weeks ago I would have believed. Chris, why don't you tell us a little bit about what happened here?
Man, it was an ugly game. Really ugly game, especially for Breeze. Two horrible throws early in the game, causing two interceptions. And, you know, it's kind of expected. It's following the Saints beat writers. I guess it was just pouring for like the first three quarters of this game. But, I mean, the Saints pulled it off. Defense made plays late. And this running game, Ingram Kamara, this duo is for real. And I think we got to really see that today.
Yeah, I think you've done a pretty good job this season sort of reminding people, you know, don't forget about Mark Ingram. I mean, he was a first-round pick for a reason, and he's played really, really well. And I'm with you. I love Alvin Kamara. I think he's doing a tremendous job. On the flip side, in the backfield, I have no idea who the heck Aaron Jones is, but, man, he had a really, really good day, Brian.
Yeah, that's kind of the one silver lining to this game, if you're a Packers fan, is that the running game showed up. He had one really nice run. I think it was about 40 or 50 yards in the first quarter, and then just kind of 5 yards, 4 yards a carry after that. We had our offensive line, you know, about as healthy as we've had it all year with Bakhtiari and Bulaga back, so I'm sure that helped matters. Still going to have Lane Taylor this game. Maybe after the bye we'll have the original starting five back. But, yeah, that was kind of the one nice thing you saw from Green Bay today was the running game kind of helped to carry the offense such that it was.
Yeah, Brian, I'd be lying if I didn't think that there was at least a possibility that Brett Hundley would come in and he would do his Matt Flynn impression and throw for like 500 yards, just because that's been my experience with Green Bay backups. He was 12 for 25, 87 yards. Obviously not spectacular. Tell us a little bit about his performance, since presumably he's going to be the guy calling signals for the next several weeks.
I don't know what to make of his performance, to be honest. It was really rainy, so I'll give him that. But we didn't really try to push the ball outside at all. We tried to get the ball, complete passes kind of across the middle. It took way too long to get Jordy and Devontae involved at all. I thought Hundley... Would I have liked to have seen more? Oh, yeah, definitely. I was, frankly, a little bit disappointed with what I saw from him today. I think you just rattled off 12 for 25. That's not very good. 80-some yards, that's not going to cut it. We're going to need to see a lot more from him if this season is going to have any chance of being salvaged. And kind of in the preview, Chris and I talked a little bit about just how important these next two games are for Green Bay, this game against the Saints, and then we got the bye next week. And we play Detroit after that. And I think, as a Packer fan, you're going to learn a lot about what the state of this team is from these two games, and I was not very impressed following Hundley's performance today.
Now, to turn the site back on to the Saints, and I kind of mentioned this right at the top, the Saints are suddenly, to the surprise of, I think about just about everybody, 4-2. I mean, I'll be honest, I was one of those people who pretty much wrote the Saints off after... you know, those first couple of losses. What do you attribute this massive turnaround to?
It's the secondary. You have a quarterback duo of Marshawn Lattimore and Ken Crawley, who, I mean, kind of came out of nowhere. And I understand Lattimore was a first-round pick. He's playing lights out. And I have been his absolute harshest critic. I was very vocal during the draft. I did not like the pick. I didn't want to see another corner with injury history. But once he started really getting in there and getting to play against the top receiver, today he shadowed Devontae Adams. He just started shutting them down. And you can see this kind of confidence with the rest of this young secondary with Crawley and Bell and Williams and, you know, Vaquero is the grizzled vet at this point. They started playing together. And the Saints have not had that for years. They've not had the same secondary play 2-3 games in a row. I think. But the Saints have not had the same secondary for 3 games in a row in 3 years. So it's unheard of, but they're finally kind of putting together an NFL defense. And with this offense, that's really all the Saints need to make some noise in the NFC.
All right. And then finally for you, Brian, obviously not having Aaron Rodgers is a big problem. You know, up against a first place team, you lost, but not by that much. Do you think that this is a team that can hold serve and possibly sneak in, or do you think this is the beginning of the end of your 2017 season?
Well, I think where I'll be able to answer more definitively after we play the Lions after the bye. I kind of give the coaches some time to figure out what we have here, put a game plan together for how we want the offense to run the rest of the year. We talked about the running game already. That'll be really important to kind of sustaining drives. Hundley's not going to be the type that's going to, you know, make plays 11, 12, 13 times to really extend drives that way. But if we can get the running game going, that'll take a lot of pressure off. But speaking of pressure, we didn't have hardly any pass rush on New Orleans today, and that is going to be a major problem for us if we cannot figure out a way to get pressure on opposing quarterbacks. Our corners today actually played pretty decent compared to what we've seen the last 5-6 years in Green Bay. Not a bad showing, but they were asked to cover for way too long, and I can count on one hand probably the number of times that Drew Brees had to hurry a pass. So that's not a winning formula for Green Bay. They got to get that sorted out. Otherwise, it's going to be a long season.
All right. There you have it, gentlemen. Thank you for the time.
Yep. Thanks, Justin.
This is Justin, the Seahawks superfan. Here I'm going to talk about my own game, the Seattle Seahawks victorious over the New York Football Giants by a score of 24-7. So let's just kind of go through it. Game started off really slow. Believe it or not, the Seahawks have yet to score a first quarter touchdown this year, and that was no different today. They even ended up something crazy like 8 plays inside the red zone in the first quarter and couldn't punch it in. So at the end of the first quarter, it's tied nothing-nothing. The Giants, meanwhile, I mean, I like Eli Manning a lot, I'll be honest. I think more so than most people. Poor guy can't catch a break. His top three starting wide receivers are gone. Like carted off with ankle injuries a few weeks ago. And so it's a bunch of guys off the practice squad against the Legion of Boom. And that went about as well as you would expect. Eli's always struggled against Seattle. And you do, when your leading receivers are Evan Engram, who's an okay player, but Travis Rudolph, Wayne Gallman, Orleans Darkwa, it's a tough situation. He, in the entire game, has 134 passing yards. For the entire game, that's crazy. As a result of this kind of sort of frustrating red zone game, the Seahawks end up going for it on like 4th and 2 in the red zone, don't convert on it. And then you're thinking, okay, well, their defense will hold and they'll get the ball back, which they did. Then the Hawks have the ball at midfield. And Thomas Rawls, who's still trying to come back and be the guy he was 2 years ago, coughs it up. And the thing is run back to, I want to say, the 20, and then Eli punches throws a touchdown pass shortly thereafter. And that's it. That's like the entire offense for all of New York. But as a result, they go to the half up 7-3. Start a second half, though, the Seahawks, who had a ton of penalties, Jermaine Ifedi had 3, finally seemed to get their stuff sorted out, and then the talent difference is just too much. Russell Wilson ends up throwing 3 touchdowns in the second half, throws for 334 yards. Doug Baldwin continues to be one of the absolute best wide receivers in the NFL, 9 catches for 92 yards. They put up an unanswered touchdown in the third quarter, 2 in the fourth quarter, probably could have gone for more. So this game that looked kind of close, kind of frustrating, actually had the Giants in the lead at the half, turns into kind of a blowout that everybody sort of expected. And a lot of it has to do with just the talent gap, especially you have, you know, a Seahawks team who's fairly healthy, and a New York Giants team, which has no NFL caliber wide receivers on the roster. So I'm happy with the win. Seahawks improved to 4-2, technically in second place behind the Rams, just because the Rams have played one more game. The Rams run by next week, so assuming the Seahawks beat the Texans, they'll have the same record, in which case, owning the tiebreaker for first place is not too shabby. So as it is, I'll enjoy the win. This is Justin. I'm here with Titan Chaps, the Titans super fan. Your Titans were victorious over the Cleveland Browns by a score of 12-9 in overtime. This one was sneakily one of the more entertaining games of the week, at least at the ending. I was watching and I had a good time. So why don't you tell us a little bit about this game?
You know, it's a win, so there's that. But it's definitely not a win that you feel good about when you go out there against the winless Browns, and you almost, with I think 1:55 away from the first tie of the season at 9-9 with 6 field goals, definitely doesn't warm your heart or make you feel good about your team's chances moving forward. But we'll take the win. Ultimately, the Browns look confused as far as just not knowing who the quarterback is. Another quarterback change in the middle of the game, going to Cody Kessler this time. And they looked actually a little better with him at the helm, it seemed like. The Titans you know, they were firing on all cylinders as far as they had Mariota in there. DeMarco Murray and Delanie Walker were both questionable to probably not going to play, both played. And, you know, to be able to go out and not score a touchdown and really be fairly ineffective the entire game was pretty disappointing. Kevin Byard, one of our safeties, had an awesome game, had three interceptions by himself. So that's impressive, to say the least. And I look forward to, you know, hopefully several more years of him looking good in the defensive backfield. You know, all in all, it's a win, but it's not a win that you feel great about. But we'll take it, and we'll go into the bye week limping our way in, I guess.
Now, I know the Browns are not your expertise. Obviously, you're the Titans super fan, but let's talk a little bit about that decision. You know, I was very critical of how Hugh Jackson handled the quarterbacks last week, where he started with the rookie for the first couple of days, or sorry, for the first couple of games, then benched him and then brought him back in. And then, I don't know, to me, this was even more ridiculous. Starts DeShone Kizer again and then yanks him at halftime. I mean, to me, you're either in or you're out on your rookie quarterback starting. What are your thoughts on that, especially as a guy who has a, you know, young quarterback who was, I thought, brought along the right way?
You know, I thought going into this season, honestly, that Cody Kessler would be the starter and they would give Kizer at least a year to sort of get his feet under him. I mean, it's not like they were going to be playing for the Super Bowl or that they had tons of weapons for him to be throwing to. And, you know, they decided early on to throw him into the fire. And I think once you decide to pull the cord and throw the rookie out there, you got to take what you have and go for it. And I think they're probably, you know, whatever Kizer could have been, they've probably ruined him mentally at this point. And I don't know if there's any coming back from that or not, but definitely just a tragic way to begin your career for Kizer. And it just seems like a mess. Every week, who's in, who's out, nobody knows. Just a mess.
Now, your Titans are 4-3. Obviously, this was not their best showing. I mean, like you said, you know, narrowly winning in overtime against a winless team does not fill you with confidence. That being said, though, I mean, you're not in the most difficult division in all of football. Early in the season, a lot of people liked the Titan chances quite a bit. You're tied in first place as it is. Given your competition, do you still feel like a AFC South title is something that's potentially in the cards?
You know, it's always possible, but at this point, it feels like the Jaguars are really ramping up and maybe even getting a little stronger every week, it feels like. The Texans seem like they've had a breath of fresh air breathed into them with DeShone Watson. And the Titans, they seem to be doing their typical Titans thing, where one week they look pretty good and you feel pretty confident, and the next week they, you know, have a 12-9 win in overtime against the Browns. I won't rule it out, but I definitely don't feel as good now as I did in the preseason. I thought the Titans maybe would lock up the AFC South this year, and it's looking like it's going to be maybe down to week 17 before we know who's going to kind of meander their way to the top of that division.
All right, chaps, thank you very much.
Hey, thanks a lot.
Now I'm here with Joe, the Minnesota Vikings super fan. Joe, your Vikings were victorious this week. I know that's got to feel really good for you. The score is pretty tight over the Ravens, but according to you, it's a close blowout in that 24-16 victory. Why don't you tell us what that means?
Yeah, I mean, the game started off just being a slobber knocker defensive field goal battle. You know, first possession of the game, the Ravens, you know, go three and out, or they actually turn the ball over deep in their own territory. Vikings go for the kill almost immediately and, you know, throw an interception. Then the Ravens almost turn the ball over, but get saved on a, you know, unnecessary roughness penalty, and basically go back and forth, kicking field goals, you know, for most of the, for all of the first half, actually, as you know, the Vikings went into the half up 9-6. And then in the second half, you know, the Vikings finally scored a touchdown. Tavius Murray came out, you know, busted a 35-yard run to begin the second half, and then ended up getting it into the end zone shortly thereafter, you know, to get the game's first touchdown going. And then after that, the Ravens score, you know, another field goal. Basically, the story of the game was the Vikings defense and the ineptitude of Joe Flacco. I'm pretty sure the
Ravens front office has just got to have Stockholm syndrome at this point, with how, you know, they have to feel like hostages in against Flacco's contract. I mean, there was one play where they were going for it in a hurry up offense, and he just turns and he chucks it out to the flat, overthrowing his, you know, receiver's head probably by a good 5 yards. And it was that play was indicative of the way that they were, you know, playing the whole game. Then the Ravens get a garbage time touchdown to end the game. But at that point, the Vikings were playing, you know, super soft cover, you know, coverage defense at that point. But really not a game that was as close as it indicated. I think that the Vikings had 5 or 6 sacks on the game. Ravens just really struggled to move the ball. They probably wouldn't scored some of the first field goals that they did in the first half if it wasn't for unnecessary roughness penalties against the Vikings.
Yeah, and don't let the box score fool you. Joe Flacco didn't throw any interceptions, but he had 3 fumbles. Just an absolute disaster of a game. I do, though, want to highlight Latavius Murray. He's starting to look like a really, really good offseason pickup. Had 113 yards and a touchdown, averaging over 6 yards a carry. How are you feeling about your Minnesota backfield right now?
It's great, and really it's not even so much the Minnesota backfield if you really look at it, because Cook was having a great season before he got injured. I think that what it is that Shermer's offensive game planning and the rebuilt offensive line is really what should be highlighted in this situation. The Vikings ranked 12th in the league in rush offense, as well as 12th in the league in pass offense. So you can really see that, you know, with Shermer's play calling, there's a lot of balance in that offense. And so, you know, teams can't really just throw 8 men into the box like they used to against the Vikings offense, as well as they have to really be mindful of the Vikings passing game. And the Vikings passing game today came out and it was garbage. The bad Case Keenum showed up versus the good Case Keenum, but was really saved by the Vikings defense and the rushing / offensive line of the Vikings offense.
All right, Joe, there you have it. Thank you very much. Congratulations on the big win, on being 5-2 and being in first place in your division. Whew. It's going to be a good
Absolutely.
Season.
Thank you. Yes, sir. Headed to London next week.
All right, that's going to do it for another episode of the Next Fan Up podcast. Thank you to all the super fans. Thank you, the listener, for listening. If you like the show, please spread the word, like us, share us, leave us a review on iTunes or Stitcher or wherever your favorite podcasts are sold. You can follow us at NFU Podcast. You can also email us nextfanup@gmail.com. You can check out our website, especially if you want to reach out to any super fans in particular. It's got all of our Twitter handles. That's going to be nextfanup.wordpress.com. With that, I'm going to turn it over to Landry Jones. There you have it.
Next week will be next week. Today I'm going to enjoy it. I'm going to go back home and hang out.